Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Chrystia Freeland, who is the editor of Thomson Reuters Digital. Previously, she reported for the Financial Times, both in New York and London, and was a deputy editor of Canada's The Globe and Mail. She has also reported for The Economist, The Washington Post, and is the author of Sale of the Century, The Inside Story of the Second Russian Revolution. She has an article at The New Yorker, Super Rich Irony, Why Do Billionaires Feel Victimized by Obama? And her latest book just out is Plutocrats, The Rise of the New Global Super Rich and the Fall of Everyone Else. Welcome to Background Briefing, Chrystia Freeland.
Thank you very much, Ian. Pleasure to be with you.
And we're on the eve of the second presidential debate between the incumbent and a certifiable representative of the 1%.
So even of the 0.01%.
And if he's to become president, do you think that we're likely to become more of a plutocracy and less of a democracy?
Well, look, I certainly think that some of the policies and some of the attitudes that we've heard from Mitt Romney would push America more in the direction of plutocracy. You know, I think the underlying forces are not actually political. I think there are some very powerful underlying economic forces, globalization and the technology revolution. But I think you can make a political choice. Is your politics going to push against a winner-take-all economy or exacerbate it? Some countries have their politics push against. You know, I think the Northern Europeans, especially the Scandinavians, have done that really well. In other countries, the politics really leans into it. And, you know, in recent decades in America, you know, the politics have been leaning into the winner-take-all economy, and I think that Romney would continue that. I was particularly struck as, you know, and I'm certainly not unique here, by his 47% remark and why it struck me so much, as I wrote in my New Yorker piece, and actually as I write in the book, is it wasn't the first time I heard that. When Mitt Romney talked, you know, I think certainly with distance and maybe a little bit of disdain about the 47%, that's something that I had been hearing from a lot of plutocrats. I think that's, if not a truth universally acknowledged in those circles, a very common way of looking at the world.
So it's also an inaccurate way of looking at Americans. Americans, I find to be incredibly industrious and hardworking, and they don't are not victims. They don't see themselves as victims. They have aspirational, both aspirational politics and aspirational economics, if you will, and they certainly are not overpaid, which is what a lot of plutocrats think. And they're very productive. I just find it extraordinary that there is this notion out there that was expressed by Mitt Romney.
Well, I agree with you, Ian. Now, judging by your accent, I am going to hazard a guess that you are not American-born. Is that fair?
That's true. I was born in Australia. Post-convict time, but...
So I share a Commonwealth background with you because I'm Canadian, and I share maybe your slight outsider's admiration for Americans, and especially for the American middle class. You know, I think the American middle class right now is really being hammered by these economic forces of globalization, of the technology revolution. And, you know, what economists are documenting is something that they describe as the polarization of the labor market. Or, you know, one set of economists, these are actually English economists, talk about it as the division of the world into the lousy and the lovely jobs. I think that's absolutely right. And most of the jobs that the middle class does are the lousy jobs. And, you know, when people talk about the shape of the economy, as the economy recovers from recession, and I think that recovery is happening, albeit much more slowly than people would like, many of the economists I talk to say, you know, the sort of the journalistic concern is with structural unemployment. Will unemployment, you know, forever be high? A lot of economists I talk to say what you should be worried about is that structurally those middle-class jobs will become lousy, lower-paying jobs than they were before. And I do think that's happening. And what I think you know, we have to be aware of when we think about the economy and when we think about the political economy and the politics around the economy is, you know, we're living through a tale of two cities or a tale of two economies. We're living through this period when the middle class is getting hammered because of these objective outside forces. The people at the very top are doing better than ever. And we have to understand that there are these two very distinct economic experiences happening at the very same time. And those experiences do shape the political attitudes of the people who live in these two different worlds.
And again, I'm speaking with Christia Freeland, who is the editor of Thomson Reuters Digital. And her latest book just out is Plutocrats, The Rise of the New Global Super Rich and the Fall of Everyone Else. And your book, Christia Freeland, has this wonderful cover of a Gulfstream jet parked in a suburban driveway as though it was sort of a flashback to the 50s, the Aussie and Harriet days, with a mother walking her child into the jet while other people in the background are washing their cars. This, if only it were true that the Gulf Streams were trickling down. But I spoke to somebody recently who was at Aspen at a recent conference, and they were just parked wall to wall. What I find extraordinary about the wealthy is that they're insecure, that the next mansion over in the Hamptons is bigger than theirs. Did you find that?
Absolutely. And I think actually that insecurity, sort of once you step into that world, the insecurity becomes less puzzling. And at least the way I explain it is it's less puzzling for two reasons. One is there is a lot of turnover among the super rich right now. So, you know, this income inequality, this winner-take-all economy is being driven in large measure by this economic revolution we're living through. And what that means is there are lots of these thrusting outsiders pushing their way into that space. And that space is, in fact, really, really competitive. You know, this super elite, the guys who fly around on private jets, they are very, very rich. And I don't for a moment want to suggest that their lives are easier or even comparable in their difficulty to the lives of someone who is sort of towards the bottom of the middle class, working, you know, maybe two really difficult jobs to just stay afloat. I don't want to say that at all. But from the inside, these super rich guys, and they are almost exclusively men, they work long hours. They work 60, 65, 70 hours a week. A lot of them keep on working, you know, well into their 60s, into their 70s. If they are in the managerial class, they feel they could lose their jobs at any time. We just saw the CEO of Citigroup, Vikram Pandit, today effectively be kicked out by his board. Now, he was making a lot of money, but he lost his job. So, you know, there is this incredible sense of pressure, sense of, you know, there's someone who's going to eat my lunch. As Andy Grove, the founder of Intel, put it, only the paranoid survive. That's the attitude of those guys. And so I think that that is part of what drives the insecurity. The other thing that I think drives the insecurity, which again can seem so, you know, frankly surreal if you're outside this world, is income inequality. Actually, it becomes more pronounced the closer you get to the top. So, you know, Occupy Wall Street introduced this notion of the division between the 1% and the 99%. In some ways, the sense of difference and of division is as acute within the 1% as it is throughout the economy. So, you know, the millionaires, even, you know, the guys making, you know, a mere $10 million, and I have this, you know, line in my book where one of the people who lives in this world recounts a conversation among her friends where one of her friends said, you know, $20 million, it doesn't go that far. It's only $10 million after taxes. And the guys who are making a mere $20 million, I'm saying this with irony, please, they're really envious of the true billionaires. So there is that intense status anxiety even among people who really, you know, from the outside, viewed objectively, have nothing to be anxious about.
So you grew up in a social democracy in Canada, so did I. The Europeans, their social democracy is somewhat under threat, but by and large, they've found a way to take care of most of their citizens in ways that the American workers, I don't think, have any concept of how badly off they are. And what little we have in terms of a social safety net here in the United States is under threat at the moment, Social Security and Medicare being the basic achievements so far of the Democratic Party. And of course, in the last debate, President Obama said he and Romney are on the same page vis-a-vis Social Security, which was quite astounding. How do our plutocrats feel about stepping over homeless people on their way into a fancy restaurant? That is something that you simply don't see in other countries like Australia and Canada. You don't see the refuse of our society, the human refuse, the wounded, the walking wounded in the streets in quite the way that you see here in the United States. And that's bound to grow if the disparity becomes greater and we become more and more of a plantation economy.
Yes, well, I do agree with that. One thing that I have been struck by is how Canadian I felt as I researched and really sort of dove into and wrote this book. And that sense of being very Canadian for me was really increased when I shared the book in sort of manuscript form with some of my Canadian friends, including Canadians who you would probably call plutocrats. And I was a bit anxious. You know, I thought that they might be, you know, very hostile to what I had to say. And what I found was they were just tremendously supportive. My favorite was the response I had from Paul Martin, the former Canadian Liberal Party Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, who, by the way, balanced the Canadian budget. So, you know, you can be a Liberal and also be fiscally responsible. And what was so interesting about his reaction to my book, Ian, was it really mirrored what you had to say. And, you know, Paul Martin, he's a former prime minister. He can, you know, he can schmooze with anyone he wants to in the United States. And he said he had increasingly become really alienated from and really astonished by the gap that he felt was growing between the richest Americans and everybody else. And he said he just found it sort of hard to stomach. He found it hard to understand how, you know, in particular, he said, you know, he couldn't understand how people on Wall Street could be criticizing welfare bums and, you know, talking about the entitlement state of people at the bottom when he said they've just had the biggest welfare check written to them. It was called the TARP. And this, by the way, you know, is the comment, and you know, I interviewed him for my book, and I quote him, that this is a comment from former Canadian Prime Minister, former Canadian Minister of Finance, and, by the way, also a self-made plutocrat. He made a fortune in the shipping business before he went into politics. So I do think, you know, that distance between the middle class and the poor and everybody else is particularly acute in the United States. I think that's part of the reason why there is so much hostility towards President Obama and why you hear from some people at the very top, you know, these sort of anguished cries of class warfare every time you raise the question or talk about the issue of income inequality. And someone who helped me understand this is actually a really interesting guy. If you haven't had him on your show, Ian, I urge you to do so. Called Nick Hanauer,
I have had him on, indeed, and I played his TED Talk as often as I can.
Yeah, so Nick is great, and the way he put it to me, you know, speaking of your point about the homeless people, he said, you know, the reason the plutocrats are so hostile towards the president, the reason their reaction, he sees it as not being just about self-interest, but being an emotional one. And he says that's because otherwise they couldn't live with themselves. As long as they feel that their wealth is equivalent to their civic virtue, as long as they truly are able to believe, not just benefit from, but believe in the trickle-down economy and believe that by doing well in business, they are doing good for everybody else, they can step over that homeless person on the way to a fabulous meal in a fabulous restaurant with a clear conscience, because they can say, actually, I'm making the world better through my business. And if that person is poor, it's just because, you know, they're part of this 47% who are dependent on government. The minute you start challenging that paradigm, I think you become very morally uncomfortable.
And again, I'm speaking with Christia Freeland, who is the editor of Thomson Reuters Digital. And her latest book just out is Plutocrats, The Rise of the New Global Super Rich and the Fall of Everyone Else. And now, in your article in New Yorker, Christia Freeland, the super rich irony, why do billionaires feel victimized by Obama? It is a bit surreal, given how the Obama economy has been so good to the rich. And as you point out, Manuel Sykes up there at Berkeley has found that 93% of the gains during the 2009 and 2010 recovery went to the top 1% of earners, and the top 0.1% of earners have captured 37% of the total recovery pie. So it's a bit hard to take, given that Main Street is languishing and Wall Street is thriving. And why is it then, I guess the explanation for the hatred of Obama is a little hard to understand.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I also, Ian, really find this mysterious. Because actually, you know, if you were a Martian, just looking at the economic statistics, you would say that the middle class and, you know, the working poor should be quite angry at President Obama. And Wall Street should be in love with the guy. You know, the people at the very top should think he's fantastic. The stock market now has almost returned. It's within spitting distance of its pre-crisis levels. Just think about that. So stock market has almost fully recovered. Corporate balance sheets are, you know, overflowing with cash. Companies have more money than they know how to invest right now. So objectively speaking, the super rich really haven't done that badly. And, you know, also, by the way, if we want to talk about material facts, although the president has talked about raising taxes on the super rich, he hasn't actually done it. You know, the Bush tax cuts are still in place. You know, so when I tried to explore this mystery of why, you know, despite the fact that, you know, you think of these people as being, you know, very practical, very pragmatic, very numbers-based, why are they so angry at a president who hasn't done them much material harm, if any? What I came back to really was, above all, this emotional point we're talking about. Because what Obama has done is he has had the temerity to challenge this equation, which I think has been conventional wisdom in American public life since the Reagan era, you know, that trickle-down did work. That if you create an economic order in which those at the very top can prosper, that is an economic order which is good for everybody. And President Obama has actually asked, is that the case? And in fact, he said, it's not. He's said, you know, there are some things that companies can do that can be great for the people who own those companies, that can be great for their investors, but actually may not, you know, at least in the short term, be good for the American middle class. I happen to think that he is right to observe that. But I think, you know, as our mutual friend Ian, Nick Hanauer points out, that is really an existential challenge to the plutocrats.
Well, Christia Freeland, you certainly succeeded. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Christia Freeland, who is the editor of Thomson Reuters Digital. Previously, she reported for the Financial Times, both in New York and London, and was the deputy editor of Canada's The Globe and Mail. She has also reported for The Economist, The Washington Post, and is the author of Sale of the Century, The Inside Story of the Second Russian Revolution. She has an article at The New Yorker, Super Rich Irony, Why Do Billionaires Feel Victimized by Obama? And her latest book just out is Plutocrats, The Rise of the New Global Super Rich and the Fall of Everyone Else. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producers Michelle Manas and Tariq Mohammed. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where we welcome your comments. And the conversation continues online at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.